KLZ 560 AM and FM presents ATX, Ask the Experts, the most informative consumer-driven talk radio program in Denver. Now we turn our attention to estate planning with attorney Michael Bailey. 9 years ago, Michael became aware of a dire need for long-term care for our wartime veterans. He understands that many of his aging clients can't get around anymore. So he designed his practice to be mobile. He'll come to you to assist with VA benefits, Medicaid, and estate planning, including wills, trusts, and how to avoid probate. Keep this number in your phone because your questions and comments are welcome. 303-477-5600. Now on ATX, Ask the Expert, Michael Bailey on KLZ 560, The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7. Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home. And when he died, all he left us was alone.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 AM KLZ, also heard on 1220 AM, 95.3 FM, and 100.7 FM at 560thesource.com and on the TuneIn app. Glad to be here, glad to be able to talk with you so that we can do things besides just leave your family alone. So we're going to talk a little bit today, well, about estate planning. You know, that's pretty exciting. You know, gee, what's this mobile estate planning about? Estate planning? Did you have any other questions or is that just the easy one? Okay, fine. We can do that one. So I asked my wife at lunch today because I had the chance to eat lunch with my wife and I asked her, so what should I talk about on my show today? And she said, well, you know, I don't know, maybe you could talk about what happens when you get crazy family situations. I said, okay, let's do that. So if you have a crazy family situation you'd like to tell me about, phone number to talk to me on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. Now, I've often talked about estate planning as estate planning is not for you. You know, whatever happens to you when you die, well, you know, you can move on to the great beyond. Or we can, you know, have a discussion from a religious standpoint about what happens at death. And, you know, my religious beliefs inform me of one thing, other people's beliefs inform them of other things. And, you know, we won't get too far into religious beliefs. That's for our sister station, the Christian station that's across the hallway. Yeah, they can have that discussion here. We're just going to talk about estate planning. So we talk about, all right, we've got all of these exciting, wonderful, happy things with estate planning. So you're gone. So who are we going to leave stuff to? Well, a lot of people are, a lot of people want to leave things to their kids. Not everybody does, but a lot of people want to leave assets to their kids. My client this morning wanted to leave not everything to kids, but, you know, some to their kids and some to charities. And that's okay too. But your own family situations took, your family situation dictates how that works. So, by the way, I just got a text from my wife that says, hey, comma, you took my suggestion. Thanks, with a little smiley face. So apparently my wife is listening and she likes that I took her suggestion. So, you know, that's always good. You know, by the way, on matters of legal import and legal questions, I tend not to take her suggestions since she's, in fact, not an attorney. But, you know, on what I should talk about, I can listen to her. Anyhow, so, you know, family situations. I mean, my clients this morning, they were in a similar situation to me. They are on their first marriage and only marriage, and they are going to – they're leaving most of what they have to their kids, but they're also leaving some to charity. Okay, cool. Well, that's fine. So we've got that type of – so that's our family situation. And that family situation, it seems pretty simple. Okay, well, we'll go ahead and we're going to give things – you know, I mean, if I die first, I'd like my wife to get everything. But, you know, I have a wife and I like my wife, so I want my wife to get everything. Not everybody thinks that that's, you know, not everybody has a wife or, you know, a spouse of any sort. And if you don't have a spouse, then maybe we have different type of planning that needs to occur. But what if you have more than one spouse? Well, you're not supposed to have more than one spouse at a time. That's bigamy. And, you know, either polygamy or polyandry, depending on what direction it goes. You know, male with multiple wives is polygamy. Female with multiple husbands is polyandry. You know, the law has disfavored those and said, no, we're not supposed to do those, at least here in Colorado and in the United States. But let's say that you've been married multiple times. So you have spouse and ex-spouse. Well, most people who get divorced don't like their ex-spouse anymore and don't want to leave anything to their ex-spouse. But that's not always the case. And it gets a little bit even more complicated if you have an ex-spouse and children along with that ex-spouse. So you've got children from an ex-spouse. Perhaps you have children with the current spouse. Perhaps your ex-spouse has other children from another marriage. You know, it gets more complicated when you start to have more than one marriage. And, you know, this is the type of thing that, you know, your life situation, everybody's life situation is different. It starts to dictate what you do and do not want to do. Now, I mean, there's no one solution. It's like, okay, this is exactly what you have to do for this situation. But, you know, some situations dictate other things. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey on 560 AM, The Source. Also heard on 1220 AM, 95.3 FM, 100.7 FM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Phone number to talk to me on air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. So, you know, when it comes to having spouses and I actually run into this a fair amount with people who have gotten remarried later in life. And so, you know, they grew up, they had a spouse, they went through and did all of their things, you know, of being young parents and so on and so forth. And then for whatever reason, they ended up getting divorced later on. Okay. So, you know, and that happens and that's the way it goes. So if you've got somebody who gets divorced later in life. So, you know, let's say you get married at, you know, in your mid-20s and you have kids and then you raise those kids and then you end up getting divorced. And then later on, you find someone else who you would like to marry. So your mid-50s, early 60s, you get married. You each bring assets to the marriage, but you each have your own kids. Well, now we have a good question of, well, what do we do with that? How does that work? You know, are there ways to deal with that? Are there ways to make sure that we can keep those assets separate? You know, what if we already got married and we were like, oh no, now we want to keep those assets separate because we didn't do a premarital or a prenuptial agreement. What do we do? Well, fortunately, there are solutions to these type of things. I have a fair amount of clients who they haven't done like a prenuptial agreement. You know, they've kept things separate, but then they're like, well, you know, we'd really like, you know, the husband from the second marriage says, well, I'd really like my assets to go to my kids. And the wife says, well, I'd really like my assets to go to my kids. And then we say, well, but you both live in the same house. Whose asset is that? Now we have to think about this. Is it a joint asset? If it's a joint asset, how do we split things up? What if we've got a joint asset that, you know, was brought to the marriage by one person, but they both end up living there? There's all sorts of different questions that come up of what they want to do. So in that case, you know, do we need to do necessarily a full marital agreement of, okay, we're, you know, whether it's, I mean, in Colorado, they're marital agreements, not necessarily you can have a prenuptial or a postnuptial, but we just call them all marital agreements. And we say, okay. And, you know, maybe we just do like what I would refer to as a marital agreement light, where it's not a full marital agreement. We're going to discuss everything. We say, okay, we agree as spouses that we're happy to be married to each other and we didn't marry for money. And we don't really feel like that's what we need to do. Is it doesn't have to be all about money. So sometimes we go with the, and I quote the great philosopher Kanye West, who teaches us, we ain't saying she's a gold digger, be it she ain't messing with no broke. And then there's some other word that I'm not allowed to say on the air. Right, Dave? I can't say that word.
Yeah, you can.
I can say the last line of the "She ain't messing with the gold digger, but she ain't messing with
no
bro."
Oh no, you're not allowed to say that.
No, that's
I'll
a bad
word. I'll play it later.
Okay. Yes, but you know that's a word that we really shouldn't say. It's not a happy word. It's a bad word, and you know, it's not a word. You know, everybody who knows what it is, you know, but you know, we're not trying to say here. You know, I mean, if you have a, I mean, you know, I've had people call me like, "Oh, well, you know, my dad married this no good so-and-so gold digger, and she's just trying to get the money and so on and so forth." And I'm like, okay, well, you know what? Dad gets to make his own decisions. You may not like that he married himself a trophy wife, or, you know, you may not like that mom married herself a trophy husband, but that was their choice. And sometimes kids get all up in arms and like, "Oh, well, you know, oh, what are we supposed to get for our inheritance?" I'm like, well, why don't you talk to your dad? And why don't you see what you can do about that? You know, there's a possibility that you can take and you can have dad put his money into a trust, which is then available for the use of a spouse, if a spouse were to survive. And then upon the spouse's death, it goes to you as kids. If that's what dad wants to do to try and protect from the proverbial gold digger, whether it be a guy or a girl, you know, that's a possibility. We can do that. We could also limit the access of the spouse to those funds. I had a client who just on Friday, I got a call, and in their trust, which I didn't write but was there, there was an unusual provision. And the unusual provision said that the two parents who obviously had come from a second marriage, because they each had four kids who were young or who were similar age, but they weren't married to each other at the same time because they weren't they weren't married together at that time. But the house that they lived in, there was a provision that was added to a trust as an amendment that said if the house were to be sold, so if the mom ever wanted to move, or the dad, if in this case the mom had survived and not the dad or the wife, that if it were ever sold, that the proceeds were to be split up amongst the kids. And the person who called me was actually the realtor, who said, "Well, we don't want to split it up amongst the kids. We want to, you know, we'd like for the mom to be able to use that money and go buy another house down in Arizona." And, you know, I was reading through this trust, and I'm like, well, that is what this appears to say. And there was also a thing that said, well, you know, this will apply whether or not only one's alive or not. I'm like, cool. But then we ran into the problem of the other terms of the trust, because the trust itself said, well, you know, if either of the husband and the wife are alive, then they can control assets, and, you know, just, you know, how the assets are invested. They can switch out one asset for another. They can distribute assets to themselves, and they have control over, you know, they as trustees have control over the assets inside of the trust and what to do with them. So we had an amendment to the trust that conflicted with the trust itself. Well, to me, this was problematic. I'm like, well, okay, so which portion's going to control? And, you know, the kids who were sure that they were going to get money were going to be very sure that the intent was ridiculously clear from the trust that when the house was sold, all the money was supposed to go to the kids and not to be used for the parents, you know, even the surviving parent. Well, the surviving parent is going to say, well, we'll get the money from the house to the kids upon my death, but I do kind of have to live somewhere. And the rest of this trust says, hey, I can, you know, make these investment decisions. So now we've got dueling parts of the trust. And my advice to them was, hey, you know, you probably ought to clear this up somehow, whether it's an agreement between all of you, or, you know, you can go to court and you can fight it out. That's fine, too. Or you could, you know, have since this was my first interaction with this client, I was like, well, you probably ought to clarify this for yourselves before you just go ahead and, you know, marching forward. And then as an extra fun bonus, the realtor let me know later on that the person, the dad in this situation, had deeded the house to he and the wife as joint tenants. And then later on, he tried to deed the house to the trust. Well, I mean, under Colorado law, we have a Supreme Court case that says, well, you know, it's not just, you know, you can sever a joint tenancy, but then it would be tenants in common where she would own half the house and the trust would own half the house. But, you know, it has to be based on intent. And was his intent to take everything away from his wife and put it into the house? Did he even know what he was doing? Had he forgotten that he had deeded it from himself to the two of them as joint tenants? You know, so it got even more complicated. And all of these things, I'm looking at it going, huh, I'm curious who wrote this trust to start with. I'm curious who did the amendment. And I'm curious if when they did the amendment, they were looking at all of the provisions of the trust or if they were just trying to write this in about the house. You know, because if I had written it and I was just writing about the house, I said, you know, notwithstanding any other powers given to the trustee upon the sale of the house, everything goes to the kids, even if somebody's still alive. We understand this. We know that it might conflict with the rest of the trust, but this is what we want to do. Okay, well, you know, then it's clear which is going to control. This amendment controls. This is the way it is. But the way it was set up, it was confusing. And at least partially it was confusing because each of the parents brought their own three or four young children, or their three or four, I mean, they're now adults, but they brought their three or four children to a second marriage, and they wanted to keep things, they wanted to split things up. I'm sure it seemed like a great idea at the time to say, hey, you know what, we'll just split the joint house so that it goes different places, and a lion's share of it will go to dad's kids because dad owned the house before they got married. You know, that I can see how that would make sense. But then, you know, to go and changing things, but you only change one part of it instead of all the parts of it, that can be problematic. So the situation dictated a slightly more complicated solution, and then there were more problems that were layered on top of it because the solution that was originally done was not fully modified for the change to the solution. So isn't that great? So you had a complicated situation that you solved one way, and then you wanted to change something about the solution, so you had to change the rest of it, but they only changed one part of it instead of the four or five parts that needed to be changed. So you can see how this can be complicated. And I'm sure that the purpose of the trust that they set up was to make sure that money got from, and assets got from dad to the kids. Well, maybe in that case, it would have been a better idea to have separate trusts for the house. You know, a trust that allows mom to live there as long as she wants, and then if she moves, maybe we can reinvest the funds somewhere else. I'm not entirely sure. This trust also had a weird provision that said, well, this is a joint trust, and if one of us dies, then they can't change or amend the revoke the trust at all. I mean, I tend to say, okay, if we want to make sure that if someone dies, we're concerned about remarriage and money going elsewhere, well, when we can have that discussion, we can talk about maybe we're going to keep the final distribution so that the new spouse can't take it away from kids. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of different solutions. This is just one that I saw that I happened to go, huh, that's kind of a weird one. And it also was instructive on how we have to make sure that what we're doing is in fact what we want to do, and that it doesn't lead itself to ambiguity, doesn't lead itself to problems, doesn't lead itself to having issues. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 AM KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 1220 AM, 95.3 FM, 100.7 FM, online at 560thesource.com, and on the TuneIn app. And my phone number to talk to me on air, it's the station's phone number more correctly, but since I'm at the station, I get to claim it for the next 12 minutes, is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. So it's very, I don't know who wrote the documents. I don't know who modified the documents. It may have been an attorney. It may have been the family themselves because, you know, as I talked about last week, there's a lot of DIY people out there, and you can find documents, you know, on the internet. You can find documents. I had a client today who said, well, you know, I've got a trust that I really like and I want it to be like that. I'm like, okay, bring it in. I'll take a look at it. If it looks okay, I'll say, cool, we'll do something like that. If it looks like there might be some different things based on what our conversation is, we'll do something different. You know, it's all based on what things are. So, I mean, getting back to what I was kind of my original premise of family situations. Well, I also have clients who've never been married and don't have any kids, and they've managed to accumulate, whether it's a lot or a little of assets. You know, some people in that situation have $50,000, $60,000 saved after a lifetime of working. Other people have $3, $4, or $5 million saved after a lifetime of working. You know, I'm sure there are people who have more than that too, but I'm just thinking of a couple of clients from the last few months. So in that case, you know, their family situation is dictating, well, I don't really have family, so what do I want to do? Some of those clients will say, well, since I don't have my own children, I'd like to give it to my brothers or sisters. Okay, so we can write that in there. Or others are like, well, I want to give it to my nieces and nephews. Okay, so we look at it, we're going, okay, we'll give things to nieces and nephews. Well, sometimes we say, well, you know, I have my favorite nieces and not my favorite nephews, and so I want to give some to the nieces and not all of it to the nephews. And or, you know, hey, I'm only, you know, I've got 20 nieces and nephews. I'm going to give it to the 6 or 7 that I have a good relationship with. The others, well, I don't need to give anything to them. And, you know, some people look at that and say, oh, well, that's unfair. If you're going to give things to nieces and nephews, you need to give it to all of them. Well, no, you don't. You can give things to whom you want to, you know. And people think, well, you know, if I've, you know, I want to make sure my brother or sister doesn't have any claim on this. I'm like, then do an estate plan and say who it's supposed to go to and not to your brothers and sisters. That works. There are a couple of rules of law that we need to be concerned about. Like, so a spouse, unless a spouse waives their right to to elect against the estate and receive a certain portion of the estate, they have the right to get a certain portion of the estate. It's up to 50%. So if you've been married for longer than, for 10 years or longer, it's 50%. And it's basically 5% every year that you're married. So, you know, 5% the first year, 10 if you're married to, you know, 25% if you're married to 5 years, so on and so forth. And the idea here is that you don't want spouses just to leave their spouse high and dry. It's also made for some interesting cases that have come out, you know, that I got to read in law school about how somebody had lived with somebody and they were considered common law married. And then later on, they broke up with their common law spouse and went on to marry somebody else, you know, in an official legal marriage ceremony. Well, although there is such a thing as common law marriage, there's no such thing as common law divorce. So if you are common law married, you have to go get an actual divorce from the legal system instead of just being like, eh, well, we broke up, we're no longer together, and we're divorced. Yay, ready to go. Woohoo! I mean, that's not how the legal system is set up. So I read cases about some famous people in the past who they died, and then suddenly this lady who, you know, hadn't been connected to this guy for 20 years showed up and was like, well, we were common law married, and so I deserve 50% of the assets. Well, okay. Whoa, hold on. That just throws a whole new thing in there. So we have to be concerned about spouses. And then we talk about, and then children. Children are an interesting thing because each children of a deceased person probably has inheritance rights, at least under the intestate statute. Intestate means to die without a will. And there's also an unintentionally omitted child statute. So if a parent says, well, I'm going to leave things to these 4 kids, you know, writes them down, cool. Then later on, the parent has a 5th child and, you know, just doesn't get around to changing their will so that it gets split up 5 ways instead of 4 ways. Then we're going to say, oh, then there is a statute out there that says, well, if they were unintentionally omitted, we're going to treat them the same as if they had been put in the will. They're going to get their portion as the other kids.
All right, I've got a question along these lines.
Sure.
What about if somebody has given up parental rights and then, you know, like you have a kid with somebody, mm-hmm. you're common law married or you're actually married,
right.
Then you break up, then you give up parental rights, somebody else adopts that kid, but you grow up, you don't have any other kids. Could that kid that was given up have some sort of claim on something?
It could, because that child is a biological child of the person. So they could have inheritance rights. So the solution to this is that you're very clear about who you're giving things to. Say, okay, you know, if let's say that, you know, you got married at 19, had a kid at 20, realized that was a bad mistake at age 30. So you break up and then move on. But, you know, no parental rights, but, you know, the kid, is like, oh, well, you know, I'd like to still want to be in contact with my biological parent. Then that biological parent, you know, has a really brilliant idea that may or may not seem brilliant and suddenly is the next tech $1 billion company. Cool. And so then they die and the kid's like, ooh, I can get my hands on some of that money. Well, there's a very simple way under Colorado law. You say, okay, I'm giving my stuff to these kids. And if you know the name or the person, you say, I'm intentionally disinheriting this person. They're going to get nothing. or any other children I may have, I intentionally disinherit. So you say, I know they're there. I know they're out there. I'm just not comfortable. I don't want to give them anything for, you know, a variety of reasons, whether it's, you know, you don't have any contact with them, or they've not made good life choices, so you don't want to leave them something, you don't want to support that. Or I've had clients who are like, you know what, my son has done really well. He's worth about $20 million. I don't think I need to leave him anything. It's not that the parents are like, oh yeah, we don't care about this son. It's like, well, son has $20 million and my two daughters are, you know, preschool and elementary school teachers and don't make $20 million a year. And because of that, we've got all of those things. So there's different reasons to not leave stuff to kids. It's just one of those questions of what you're most comfortable with and how you want it to happen. One of those situations where the situation itself and your own family situation dictates it. You know, I would love nothing more than to be in a position where my parents are like, oh, well, you know, Michael has about $50 million, so we don't need to leave him anything. You know, I would not complain about this. I'd say, oh, really? Gee, Mom and Dad, you're going to leave money to my siblings because you don't want to give me – because I've already got $50 million? Cool. You know, if I had $50 million, I'd probably help my siblings out. You know, my nieces and nephews wouldn't have to pay for college and, you know, things like that. But it's one of those deals where you have to look at the situation. You have to look at how do I want this to happen? You have to look at how do I want this to play itself out? And the best way to do that is to have a very clear plan of how you want these things to go. You know, the clearer that we can be and the better that we can describe how this is supposed to happen, the better off we're going to be. Because we want to take things and we want them to be played out. We want them to not have questions on, well, gee, this part of the trust says this and the other part says that. Well, this will is internally inconsistent. Well, what did Mom and Dad mean when they said X, Y, and Z? That's part of why we do the estate plan. That's part of why we review it. It's part of why you want to have an outside party like me write it so that you have to explain to me so that I can understand it, so I can write it and give it back to you so you can understand it. So thanks for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ. John Rush is next. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks and bye.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560, The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.